If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you. You've been listening to the infamous String Dusters and Means to an End off their brand new album, out now, Toward the Fray. If there is a silver lining to what has been a very difficult couple of years during the COVID-19 pandemic, it's likely all the great music that's been made by some of our favorite musicians and bands. In fact, some bands, like the infamous String Dusters, took that concept to the extreme, with each member contributing a solo project and album. With the release of the band's album Toward the Fray, we've noticed a culmination of all the work the guys have put into individually and collectively into their craft. Toward the Fray may be the band's strongest effort to date, with excellent playing, exceptional songwriting, and a plethora of feels. I caught up with guitarist Andy Falco and banjo player Chris Pandolfi to talk about the band, the new album, and future plans. Let's start here. As bright and hopeful as Rise Sun was, this record is way more introspective. Is it because of the time? Obviously, you were all apart from each other. The world was, for lack of a better word, crumbling around us. Is that why this record is so much darker than the previous one?
Yeah, I think we were all, you know, home. I mean, a lot of these songs were born in 2020 while we were all grounded from touring, just home. And, you know, we were apart from each other. The world was going bananas, you know, and there was a lot of uncertainty. And so naturally, you know, that definitely came out in all of the songs, because we were all writing a lot, because all of our creative energy that would have, you know, normally it's like you're dividing your creative energy to the road and then, you know, finding time to write and recording. I mean, in this case, all of it sort of funneled into the studio and the songwriting, you know. And I think we were all writing a lot when we brought the Duster songs. Everybody presented their songs. They all had a very you know, there was a tie-in that they all had, all the songs that seemed to have just a very natural sort of theme, and because we're all going through the same thing, you know. And so, yeah, I would say absolutely. And we were all, I think, diving into the songs more. And, you know, there's a silver lining from all the horror of the pandemic and what was happening. You know, from a creative standpoint, you know, there was time to spend time with our families and stuff like that. But also from a musical standpoint, there was time to really sit down and write. I mean, I know for myself, songwriting, which usually comes in batches, and you know, I usually can write work on a song here and there, and you know, but this was like a case where it was like every day, waking up in the morning, making a pot of coffee, sitting down in my studio, and every day on the schedule in the morning, writing, and sometimes having 3-4 songs kind of going all at once, you know. So it was definitely when it came to that, there was a lot to write about. And I think, you know, I think all of us were doing that. And I think, you know, proud of all the songs that all the guys brought in, and all, you know, everybody was bringing in really strong material, you know.
What was the process like? Did everybody, were you sharing around that material as it was coming together individually? Or did you wait till, you know, Falco, you had a bunch of songs to present that were completed for the rest of the band? Like, how did that process start, and how did it evolve over the course of making this record?
It was kind of a mixed bag. You know, some songs are more completed than others, just like with any record. But the thing that made this recording process unique was we just didn't have a lot of time to do pre-production, which we would normally do. And you know, it's interesting. I actually sat down for my podcast Inside the Musician's Brain with all the guys yesterday. We had a day off, and it was really cool because, you know, I interviewed everyone individually for an episode of ITMB that'll come out after our album is released. And I learned a little bit more about, you know, how everyone views the process. And I think one thing that's really evident is we didn't have a lot of time to do pre-production, which we would normally do. And that, in a way, brought out something cool because it forced us to rely on all of the strengths that we have developed as a band playing together. So we didn't necessarily have time to sit down and overcook things. We did have time to work on stuff, but it was just very limited. So, you know, you always tend to meet your deadline. So if you have a week, you use it. If you have a day, you use it. And that also falls under that category of this shared experience of working on writing, crafting, arranging music. You know, there's all these different steps that it needs to go through. But in this case, we had a very limited amount of time. And so what happened was we really fell back on all of this shared musical experience. And I think there's something really, really cool in that. You know, it was more spontaneous, and there's something that can come out of the creative process, I think, that can be very positive. You know, it's like when you're in the studio and you have those first couple takes of a song, there's a lot of times there's magic there, you know, before you're overthinking things. So we shared some stuff together, but man, it was it happened fast. You know, we got together and we had like a day and a half that we had never played any of these songs together, and we just had to throw them together. And in the absence of lots of time, we, I think, relied on our strengths and what we know to work. And in the process, that I think really colored the way that this album came together, the writing, the sound. And I think in a lot of ways was a really positive thing.
The record feels live. How much of this is live, like off the floor? Like how much, because you were so crunched for time, I can't imagine you sitting there and, you know, going over each track and finding places to overdub. Like how much of this was like live off the floor?
Well, I mean, all of it really, except for we did a few, you know, like harmony vocals usually are done not with the live take. Sometimes like the vocals themselves, the lead vocal might be redone. But the basic, you know, the tracks themselves are recorded live. And in fact, Toward the Fray, the song Toward the Fray, that's completely live. I remember that because the nature of playing guitar and singing at the same time, because when we track generally on all of our records, we track everything live. We don't use click tracks or reference, you know, metronomes or anything like that. We just play the music and we sing in full. You know, the lead singer will sing the song and then have the option afterwards if you wanted to kind of tighten up your vocal or redo it. But in order to do that, you know, you're going to get bleed on your instrument, Mike, you know? So like, for example, if I do a lead vocal, what I would do then, if I was going to redo the vocal, is I'd have to go back after we select the take that we're going to do. Wherever I'm singing, I have to sort of redo the guitar underneath it. And then, you know, and then it makes a clean track that I can then put a new vocal on. Toward the Fray, you know, was like a little bit different because of the nature of my guitar part. There's a lot of parts where it's just guitar and vocal. It really would have been difficult to try to link that up, and unnatural, really. So the only way really to do it was to just cut it all live. And that's what that is. But generally on the rest of the record, you know, if vocals were redone, some vocals were redone, harmonies were overdubbed. And maybe like a few little bits sometimes, like I might have added, I know on a couple tracks, I might have added some additional, I added some 12 string guitar, no keyboards.
We'll go back and tweak solos and stuff if need be. But, you know, the rhythm track being live, and of course that comprises, you know, 90% of the music, but we really look for that. That's where a lot of the magic is, you know, that's that shared experience playing together.
And some of the other records we did more like overdubbing, like more studio stuff where, you know, you want to, you know, generally when we're in the studio, we're just trying to serve the song really, you know? And so sometimes, you know, there are times where we'll add, you know, like I've added keyboards, sometimes a piano on previous records, sometimes like light percussion stuff, mainly like kick drums sometimes gets added. And that is really a function of just trying to, you know, sometimes to recreate the really feel of the energy of the live band. Sometimes in the studio, it's like, you just want to add a little bit more bottom to it to bring that energy in. But we didn't do any of that on this one. It was just generally, like Panda said, you know, 90% live, and then, you know, a couple, you might punch in a solo, you might fix a little mistake here and there, wrong chord, but, you know, other than that, it was pretty much, you know, and that's, I think, part of us, you know, as our records are always evolving, we always trying to sort of evolve as artists, as a group and individually. I think that, you know, we have in the last few records, particularly, really kind of, it used to be where there was a live show and then there was the records, you know, and over the last few records that I think has sort of, you know, started to fuse a little bit more, and we bridged that gap a lot more where, you know, we're improvising more in the studio and, you know, letting the improvisational elements come out as well. So, you know, it's got to be kind of live.
Also, I would imagine that a lot of these songs are early takes because things seem really loose. I would imagine that it wouldn't seem that loose, loose in a good way, by the way, not in a, you are all shoddy performers, but loose in a good way. And I think that, you know, if there was a point where you reached, I don't know, take 15 on How Do You Know, it probably wouldn't have sounded as good as it does on the record. Like, there's sort of an intimacy to it being a little bit looser. And I would imagine that because you only had a day and a half or whatever, you were rushed to get these songs done.
Yeah. Well, we had a day and a half for pre-production, and then we were in the studio for, you know, the better part of a week, but still that doesn't allow a lot of time in the studio. And we were very consistent on this record with, we would do like average, I would say, 3 to 4 takes of a song. Sometimes it was 2, sometimes it was 5, but it really wasn't often more than 5. And as you get experience, you know, all 5 of us are basically producers in some way. Some of us actually, you know, do some actual producing, but we all have developed and evolved those skills. And the question becomes, if you're going to go back and do another take, what are you trying to do better? And that's a great, like, experiential lesson of the studio that we've all developed. You know, you grow past this idea of, well, hey, I mean, we have more chances, we can do something better, right? I mean, you evolve and you sort of mature to realize that, like, this is what you do, this is what you are. And so as long as, you know, like when I'm performing and in the studio, you know, I used to, we all are so judgmental and critical of ourselves. And I used to kind of use the metric, like, was that good or not? And now that's shifted for me. And the real metric is, was I invested in that or not? You know, was I there for the performance? And actually, when you're performing, again, studio or stage, it does that. If you're really all in for a performance, like emotionally, spiritually, it doesn't mean that it's mistake free, but oftentimes it means that the mistakes don't really impact the statement of the music, because more important than getting things right, you are committed to what's going on. And so as long as that is in place, which, again, you know, we've been doing this long enough that we can turn that on as a group. I mean, some days it really comes to life, and other days it needs a little working to get there. But, you know, we know what that is. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about being committed to what we're doing. And as long as you have that, you know, you can do 3 takes and say, hey, this is what it is. You know, even if there are some, like, little mistakes that need to be fixed, the statement and the message of the music is in place. And that's, again, we had, you know, 5 days to record. And so we would fall in line with that timeline, and we got things done quickly. And again, just another weird sort of silver lining of being, you know, rushed essentially, is that part of the music, I think, was there from the get-go, and that allowed us to get things done in a timely manner.
It does speak to your experience of being a live band and wanting to blend that in with as much of what you're doing in the studio as possible. You don't have a chance to do a second take, you know, on stage. So, I mean, if
sometimes anything, I wish I did.
Me too.
But you don't have that opportunity. And so if you're going to be true to yourselves as maybe a live band first, you sort of have to live with that. Was that everything it could have been, you know, sort of mentality, right?
Yeah. And you want, you know, it's about, you know, communication really. Music is an art form of communication. And, you know, I think to some degree, you know, there's a period of time where it's like you go into the studio, and nowadays with technology, I mean, you can fix anything that is not right. And that's not necessarily a good thing.
Right.
Because back in the old days, I mean, when we used to record with tape, you know, and you had to punch in a solo, well, that was destructive. It wasn't like you can undo it, you know? So you had to decide, well, there's this one little note that's like, maybe not just right. I don't know though. If I try to fix that though, I might lose the whole phrase and everything's sitting so right. So you'd leave stuff. And if you listen to old classic, you know, the greatest songs, the greatest records of the old days, I mean, you can listen to Beatle records and you think you can hear all kinds of little blemishes, but to me, that's a good thing. That's like the human element that's in the music that's left there that I think, you know, it's no coincidence that we still listen to those records. You know, you have great songs and you have these very real performances. I mean, watching the Get Back documentary is just, you know, it just verifies, you know, you're watching them record these classic records live. I mean, right. You know, and they're doing some takes but I mean, ultimately, you know, it's about this real, genuine and playing music. And I think to me, that's my favorite part of this record is I think we always do that to some degree. We don't over fix, but this one particularly, I think to your point, I think has a little bit more of like a genuine kind of just, you know, we went in and we just played the music and got a performances that we felt were powerful and were delivering the message of the songs.
You all put out solo records over the past year and a half to 2 years. How much did those individual efforts impact the making of this record? I feel like you've all been honing your craft as instrumentalists, but man, you guys are fucking tight on this record. And even live, like I've been listening to this tour now and you guys are on fire. How much of being cooped up and working on your own records contributed to you becoming even better at your instruments?
I mean, every bit contributes, you know, it's all part of this long arcing process of, you know, growing as a human being and as a performer. I think in the case of the String Dusters, you know, we are really prolific and we do everything we can to get all of these efforts to kind of like feed into one. And I think that's, you know, an awesome thing. That's why we started this record label, Americana Vibes. And, you know, we all recognize that the band, the String Dusters, is in a lot of ways the engine of all these solo efforts and all these things that we do on the outside. And, you know, that anytime you go in the studio, work on a new record or work on any music, that's going to help you grow as a performer. I think in the case of the String Dusters, getting all these solo projects going is an important part of what we do because it allows us to come back to the Dusters, you know, without as many needs, I think, artistically. We're really able to go do our solo things that are just completely and totally us. And I know, I mean, I guess I can only speak for myself, but then when it's time to do a Dusters record, you know, I don't need more solos or jams or songs on the record. I'm just there to make the best music that I can. And as an artist, you know, I've got influences and things that I love and that I'm chasing that range far outside the realm of acoustic music and bluegrass. I mean, you know, Transbanjo is beats and samples and a lot of like virtual instruments and electronic sounds. And I love all that stuff. And I think getting that statement out there and satisfying, you know, that part of what I do allows me to come back to the Dusters, shows, records, whatever, without a lot of needs. You know, the only thing I want to do is just be the best collaborator that I can, bring these songs to life in the best way that I can, And, you know, I don't need anything more than that, really. So I feel like that is a big way that those solo efforts contribute to ultimately what we do as a band.
Did you want to add anything, Andy?
I mean, I think he's spot on. And I think that, you know, and it's, you know, it's a place for you to do, you know, your other, you know, to just appease your other creative, you know, callings, you know. And, you know, the Will of the Way is a record I made, which was definitely, you know, more of like a singer-songwriter type of record. You know, there's not really much bluegrass on there at all. And that was, you know, a lot of that is because the songs, you know, I'm writing batches of songs. You know, if I'm going to do bluegrass songs, I want to play them with the Dusters.
Yeah, right.
I mean, and I feel like what better place for those songs than there. And these other songs that maybe wouldn't quite fit as much, but it's part of my, you know, creativity. It's like, it's great to put those out. And even as, you know, when you go do live shows, you know, I do some live touring of my solo stuff. You know, and it's a different thing. I try to play like listening rooms, seated venues. It's kind of like a different sort of thing. And then it just makes, like Panda said, you know, you get back to the Dusters and, you know, you get back to playing with the five of us, and we have more than our 10,000 hours in at this point. And everything is just, you know, just creatively wide open, you know, and as the group, and it's wonderful, you know.
You guys have stayed, you know, you mentioned that you do, not on this record, but on past records, where you will add some drums or you'll add some keyboard or whatever, but you guys have stayed very true to this being an acoustic band for the most part, while others in the scene have experimented with growing their sound with effects and other sonic magic. You know, the guys that you're sharing the stage with right now, their albums are much bigger in recent years than they have been in the past. How important is it for you guys to sort of stay true to that more traditional approach of just being the five of you and your instruments?
I don't think that's something that is so predetermined before we go to work on or play music. I do think that we all love bluegrass, and, you know, we've been on tour, and last night we had a show canceled in Cleveland, and we've been sitting around on the bus jamming like for a lot of the recent days. And, you know, I think, and we're finding out too, that that's kind of like unique to us, and not a lot of other bands necessarily do that. And we're surprised to find that out, because we love sitting around and jamming, and we've actually kind of gotten in the habit, like before we go on stage these days, we've been sitting around for 15, 20 minutes and just jamming fiddle tunes. We have this amazingly vast collective repertoire, and that's our common thread. That's our undeniable common thread, is bluegrass and the oral tradition of bluegrass. So while it's not necessarily this premeditated decision of, you know, we want things to sound this way, or we really want to preserve this certain vibe or tradition, that's just what we are, man. And there's no denying that. And so even though, you know, the creativity, especially in the solo efforts, like what we just talked about, really expands far outside of bluegrass. Like, there's no doubt that we have those influences within us. It's just when we come together to play as a band, you know, we've been doing this now 15, 16 years, and we still haven't necessarily like exhausted all the options of what we can do with these five acoustic instruments. And that's so much of that is just comes from the music that binds us. It comes from our love of bluegrass and pushing the boundaries with these instruments and the endless possibilities that are within that. And, you know, other bands have a different calling, and the creativity takes them in different places. And like I said, we've done that too, but just a lot of, I think what drives the String Dusters is this love of bluegrass and all this time that we've put into learning our instruments. So it's not necessarily a premeditated thing. It's just who we are, and that love of the music is just there. And so it comes out, you know, whether we like it or not.
Well, we like it.
We have two songs on this record that we tracked with drums, you know, and that was just, Yeah, because like I said before, we try to serve the songs, you know, and occasionally, like in the case of these two songs, we felt like the drums would just enhance, you know, what, you know, and serve the song, you know, and it did, you know, so, you know, I think that, you know, it's Panda's right. You know, it's just that love of bluegrass and being a string band. I mean, I always feel like that is essentially what makes, you know, the structure of our rhythm together as a band is what essentially sort of is the foundation of the String Dusters sound. And I think once you start introducing, even when you introduce drum, you know, drums and stuff, which we've done with the String Cheese drummers, you know, and that's really fun, but it becomes a different thing, you know, because the structure of the rhythm is different. The roles of each individual playing rhythm changes a little bit. And in a good way, I think, but it's a different thing than what, the, you know, the String Dusters sound is, you know.
There are some songs on this record. And I don't want to go too deep into the individual songs because you're only two of the five songwriters. So I don't want to go too, but there are like, you know, Spirits Wild and When Will I Ride Again. Somebody did a brain, a mind meld there and had the same sort of feeling. With those two songs, like there's groupings of songs that all kind of fit together. The one song, Revolution, I think is the only instrumental on the record, I think.
Yes.
And when you guys perform live, there's often these bridges between songs. And I'm wondering how much of that, those jams, whether they're jams on the bus or jams between songs live, how much of that excites you just to put out maybe an instrumental record, like just 12 Revolution like songs, because it's killer, like it's amazing, it's like Jessica, it's like, you know, some of those instrumental songs that we've heard from bands that have obviously influenced you guys. Has that ever been a consideration, just to put out like a record like that?
Yeah, well, thank you, first of all. I think we are working on a compilation of instrumental. I hope I'm not sharing something, you know, that's supposed to be under wraps, but, you know, God, there just are not enough hours in the freaking day. And, you know, that's why, again, going back to this thing of like, that's why I put out a record of all instrumentals, you know, because yeah, those songs pile up so fast. But when it comes to on stage, you know, a lot of those transitional jams, they fall into a few categories. Some of them are like totally improvised on the spot and we really try to make an effort to do something new. Some of them we try something and then we, after the show, we're like, oh, that really worked. And then we'll play sort of a variation of that kind of thing. So you'll hear some like preset transitions that take on a similar character from time to time. And then we have ones that we've just simply never ever tried before. So you just never know what that's going to be. But, you know, we ripped off a little terminology. I'm pretty sure this originated in the Fish world, but you know, they talk about type two jams and there's something really powerful about centering ourselves on this idea of, okay, this section, we're going to try and really go type two. And, you know, we have a production meeting before every show where we talk through the set list and what we're trying to achieve with these different transitions. And you'll see transitions on there, some that we've done before, some that we haven't. But when we as a band are able to orient ourselves around the idea that, hey, we're going to try and do something that falls into that type two category, even that mindfulness alone as a group can be the thing that catapults us into a real moment of creativity. So it's cool. You know, we try, though we every night probably have some transitional elements that are similar to what you've heard before. We also try to have things that are totally improvised and on the spot. And, you know, you never know what it's really going to be, but, you know, it's tough. We love the instrumental stuff, but we also just have so many singers and so many songs that we just try to, I think, balance on albums and shows what those different pieces are and how much of our bandwidth they take up. And, you know, we're primarily a band that sings and does songs, but we also have these heady instrumental parts. Some are written, some are transitional. So, you know, there's never a rule about what's coming up. And I think, you know, we have so much cool instrumental stuff. I feel so lucky to be able to write so many of the instrumentals for this amazing band of amazing players. I mean, what a, you know, what a great outlet. But who knows, you know, you never know what's coming, but that's sort of how things get divvied up on albums and shows, you know, kind of as it is.
Before we talk about the tour, which has been killer, as I mentioned, both you guys, both the Dusters and Green Sky have been like top notch, like caged animals released out into the wild. You mentioned Type 2, and it's really interesting to me because we had Tom Hamilton Jr. on recently as well. And it's interesting to me that you guys are still being influenced by the type of musicians that you guys have always been influenced by. Like, it's so cool that as other guys grow up and mature and learn their instrument and learn more about what they're doing, you guys are learning along with them. And that's like, that means that you're staying active within the music that you guys love. Like that's pretty incredible that you still have this taste to learn this. You still have this desire to learn more and learn more from either your peers or influences.
Yeah, I think that before this is a business or a job, it is a passion and it's an art. And I think that, you know, ideally, I feel the most blessed of being able to do this for a living is to be able to chase that journey and to evolve as individual musicians and as a band. We're able to artistically evolve, and hopefully that goes to the end. I mean, that's the goal, really. That's ideal, you know, because that's what all this is all about, you know. I think, you know, and I think we all feel that way, and I think that hopefully that'll always be that way.
Now, when you get Tom Hamilton Jr. on your podcast, does he drop F-bombs like every third word like he did on my podcast?
It's every second word. And actually this time he mentioned the word dick a few times, which was fresh.
Tom is the man. I loved having him on Inside the Musician's Brain. And we actually talked about this exact thing. And we had this great conversation about, you know, the way we were talking about the Grateful Dead, and we were talking about the way that we perceive the different roles that they play. And specifically, we were talking about Phil, because Phil obviously is not your normal bass player. And we are so lucky to observe, you know, the Grateful Dead, the amazing songcraft, but also the way that they craft their voices and, you know, as individuals and as a group. And also Phish, who we have derived a lot of inspiration from. And I think you make a good point. You know, we're still referencing back to some of these real OG masters, and that might just be because no one has really done it better since. And everyone has put their own spin on things. And, you know, we certainly have our own way that we approach all of that. But as an influence, you know, Tom was talking about how Phil is like this orchestra under the band, and how he's like 10 musicians in one. And I think it's a great description, because while he does come back and lay things down and anchor stuff, he's also just dancing, you know, just moving in amazingly creative ways that have lots of groove and also lots of harmonic content. And it's just this in the spot, on the moment, on the spot creativity that is forged in the context of the Grateful Dead. And we try to do that same thing. You know, I try to find ways to play my banjo that fill the holes that are left empty by everything else that I'm hearing. And I try to sometimes fill a very rhythmic role, and then it's kind of more of a harmonic role. But being present with the music and centered in how everything sounds, and trying not just to play your instrument, but trying to play as 1/5 of this whole, you know, that's the goal. And I think that's a lot of times why we reference some of those bands that we look up to, just because they did that so, so well. And it's so inspiring and awesome.
You guys are on tour now with Green Sky Bluegrass. And these are, you know, friends of yours that you've been sort of in the scene with forever, but you've grown up you've grown up together. I mean, how cool is it
have that you're at-
Well, yeah, I'm being kind.
That's questionable. Because
that's my role. I'm not judging. But how cool is it that you put out records almost, well, you'll be putting out this record, but around the same time, and you're touring together, and you're sort of reliving life again, like you did when both of the bands first started out. How cool is it that you're on this ride again with Green Sky?
Oh, it's great. I listened to their record, Stress Dreams, you know, we had a few days off, and I finally had a chance to sort of pop it on and listen to it from start to finish. And it's a great record. Yeah. And it just, you know, I heard them playing some of the songs on the live shows here. And it's just, I'm so proud to know those guys and, you know, been watching their evolution as artists, you know, through all this time. And it's a really special connection I feel that we have with the Green Sky guys. You know, we just, Travis and Anders, you know, they go way back, 100 years, maybe.
Yeah.
They're like an old married couple.
Right. You guys are on tour. The tour wraps up with Green Sky, at least, at the end of February. And then you have some dates. Is the plan to continue touring this record and being out on the road as long as you can, given that you were cooped up for so long? I mean, is that, you've seen enough of your families.
The plan is to take over the world, baby. Always has been, always will be. I mean, we're just hungry to play, man. We are, you know, and it's still tough, not gonna lie. It's still, you know, we are very grateful to be out here doing it, but we are still in a phase where it feels a little bit like you're working kind of 10 times as hard for 1/10 the income. But you know what? That hasn't deterred us one bit. And we are still determined to make music and create new music and travel all over the place and bring that music to people as hard as it is right now. We are still moving forward. So I'm proud of everyone for that. Really grateful to our team. Big shout out to everyone who works behind the scenes, our crew on the road, management, you know, everyone has really... And that's not just for the String Dusters. That is like an across the music industry type of nod, you know, and we're all in that same boat of working way harder for way less. And that's just because we're passionate and committed. And it's been interesting to see what this last few years has done, you know, in a way it's sort of weeded some things out. And that's not always the worst thing in the world. And it shows you who is committed to this thing for life. And, you know, we're certainly in that boat. And so we haven't been deterred, and we're going to do whatever it takes to get our music to the people. And, you know, there's no slowing us down. And we got a lot of big plans for this year, not only around this new record, but also around touring in general. So yeah, it's inspiring to see how fired up everyone in our camp is, even in the face of these adverse circumstances. And it's inspired me, and like being in the String Dusters really always has, you know, there's so many cool things about being in a band, but getting your ass kicked and getting pushed on a day in, day out basis, you know, that's like the best thing ever. And I feel that now as much as ever on all fronts, musical, business, everything. So we're going to be out there doing it no matter what. And this year is no exception.
Is tonight's set list already done?
What do you need, Ira?
You guys do great, Mr. Charlie. It's so fun.
All right, I'll see what I can do, brother.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll be listening. We're not there, obviously, but we'll be listening.
All right, hey, that's all that counts, man. Yeah, you can listen to pretty much any String Duster show anytime, you know, on MixLR, and we've got some big streaming plans coming up, and, you know, we're putting video rig, and so it's definitely happened full steam ahead, and you know, you can participate even if you're not at the show.
So happy for you guys, so happy about the new record. Continued success, guys, and thanks so much.
Thanks
for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Great to see you, brother.
Good to see you. Be well, okay, guys.
All right.
It's always great catching up with the guys from the Dusters. They continue to be amongst the best dudes in the business, and as an added bonus, they make great music. For more on Toward the Fray and upcoming tour dates, visit thestringdusters.com. Before we leave you, let's check out another track from Toward the Fray. Here is I'm Not Alone.
Am I the only one here breathing? Am I the only one awake? Is mine the only heart that's beating? The quiet is almost more than I can take. At night, I wander through my memories. A world seemed like only passing shore, but still, it's only just to be imagining. Of all written long ago, I am lying here in bed, should be sleeping. I am listening instead, get the feeling that I'm not alone. Just the sum of all my wondering. Will I see the beauty in the end? Can I peel away the layers of longing? Can I learn to live upon my feet? Painted all these walls.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.